A very good afternoon and a warm welcome to On The Radar right here on Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju. Now it's Tuesday, the 19th of August, 2025, the second day of the week. And for many across Namibia, the moment where the pace starts to pick up and headlines begin to take shape. Now whether you're navigating the traffic in Katura, opening up shop in Oshakati, or tuning in from a quiet office in Swakopmund, thank you for choosing to spend part of your day with us. Now here on The Radar, we look beyond the surface of the news cycle. We engage the questions that matter. Which policy decisions are gaining momentum this week? What conversations are emerging at community level? And how are ordinary citizens experiencing the effect of national programs and regional developments? From economic recovery efforts and climate realities to safety, governance, and public service delivery, no topic is off limits. Our role is simple. Unpack the headlines, interrogate the promises, and create the Namibian people in every and center, pardon me, the Namibian people in every discussion. Now remember, you can follow this broadcast live via the Eagle FM website and mobile app and join the conversation through our social media platforms on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or WhatsApp. And whether you're listening from a farm outside Gobabis or studying in Ongwediver, we are honored to have to share this Tuesday afternoon with you. This is On The Radar, where Namibia's news is explained, questioned, and made relevant to your everyday life. Let's get into the top developments. Kabongo West Governor Vernasi Nimbor has called for urgent establishment of a regional investment committee to unlock the region's untapped economic potential. Now speaking during a stakeholder engagement meeting with the Namibia Investment Promotion Development Board, NIPDB, on Monday, Sinimbo said the committee would act as a central platform to attract and coordinate investors in the region. She noted that although Kabongo West has a population of more than 123,000 people and possesses valuable natural resources such as fertile soil, water, and perennial river, the region has not fully harnessed those opportunities. We have water, fertile soil, and perennial river. These are assets that make our region investor friendly, yet we have not fully entered into this potential and we must start now, Sinimbo said. She highlighted that unemployment in Kabongo West remains critically high at between 52% and 58%, particularly among young people. The governor stressed that investment in manufacturing, agro-processing and food processing industries could help absorb the unemployed youth and stimulate regional economic growth. On tourism, Sinimbo pointed to the Kabongo River and its biodiversity, including hippos and crocodiles, as potential attractions for tourism development. She proposed initiative ideas such as crocodile farming and introducing boat rides between Kurunkuru and Rundu to vitalize the sector. We really have very good tourism areas that we can tap into, but this sector is dormant, she said. We need to establish facilities and improve hospitality so tourists have good accommodation when they visit. Sinimbo assured stakeholders that her office, together with the NIPDB, will fast-track the establishment of the committee to develop a clear regional investment profile and open doors to prospective investors. Meanwhile, let's listen to Kabongo Governor as she delivered the speech.
Kabongo West region, as you might know, is a region that hosts 123,266 inhabitants. So this meeting that we had today, that we need to establish a regional investment committee, it comes at the right time that we need really to unlock our potential as a region, because this committee will make sure that we know where we can direct our investors that will come in our region. So we have a potential, especially when it comes to agriculture. That is our asset that we have as a region. We have water, we have fertile soil and so forth. So, but we have never really untapped in this potential, and we keep on talking about we have potential. So we need to make sure through this committee that we bring the right investors. we bring the right investors, we organize ourselves, because if you are not organized, even if investors want to come, you might not know exactly where to start. So this committee will really just coordinate, facilitate, and just serve as a committee that the NIPDB can communicate also with to get more information about the region. Of course, we have a regional profile that we are going to use when we set up this committee. They also need to understand what we want as a region. So we are looking forward that this committee will be established soon. Like we have seen, we have already actually identified some of the key partners, some of the key stakeholders that might serve on this committee. And we are looking forward for us to establish this committee as soon as possible so that we get the work done. Mainly, like I'm saying, we want to open doors for investors. This is a very investor-friendly region. And I will always repeat to say, if we invite investors to come, or if they come to our region, we might address some of the challenging issues of unemployment that is still forever at 58% there. So we want to see how we can establish some manufacturing companies, some processing plants, agro-processing, just that can absorb some of this unemployed youth especially. So we are very, very happy that we have this meeting today, or this engagement, well attended by the key stakeholders. So we are just looking forward that our office will make sure that we establish this committee as soon as possible for investors to start flocking to Kawango West region. One sector, one area is tourism. Tourism, like you know that we have a river, perennial river, but you hardly see investors or tourists that are coming to the region, perhaps just to see how Kawango West looks like. We have hippos, we have crocodiles, and all this, and that of course bring up more ideas. You know, perhaps we can even think of starting some crocodile farms or farming in the region. We really have very, very good tourism areas that we can really establish in the region, and we have that potential. So our river, we can have some boats that can take people, you know, from Kurenkuru to Rundu and so forth. So we can really tap in the tourism sector as well. And at the moment, I think it is a bit dormant. And of course, hospitality that comes with that. We need to establish more facilities in the region that can also provide good accommodation when our tourists come to the region. So those are some of the areas we need to focus on as well as a region.
Meanwhile, NIPDB Acting Executive for Investment, Ndapewa Hangora, underscored the importance of establishing the RIC in Kawango West, saying it will help attract and drive investment opportunities across all 14 regions of Namibia. Hangora noted that investments have largely been concentrated in Commerce, Erongo and Karas regions, and say the RIC will enable regions such as Kawango West to also benefit through job creation and economic growth. She added that the aim is to have local people identify and profile opportunities in agriculture, agro-processing and other priority sectors. According to Hangora, the region's fertile land and flowing rivers position it well for agricultural projects and agro-processing initiatives that could diversify the regional economy. Hangora also explained that the NIPDB collaborates with the Namibia Industrial Development Agency, also known as NIDA, and other state agencies to attract both local and foreign investors. While the NIPDB promotes Namibia as an investment destination, agencies such as NIDA support industrialization efforts. Namibia has recently been ranked as the number one destination for foreign direct investment in Africa, an achievement Hangora attributes to strong collaboration between government institutions and the private sector. She concluded that the establishment of the Regional Investment Committee would help address unemployment, inequality and poverty while boosting productivity and facilitating sustainable development in Kavango West and beyond. Let's now take a listen to NIPDB Executive for Investment, Dapewa Hangora.
My name is Dapewa Hangola and I'm currently the acting executive for investment. The purpose of our engagements with the Kavango West stakeholders is for the establishment of the Regional Investment Committee, which is focused on driving investment opportunities and of course highlighting in the region for investment in this part of the country. And we are really having these sessions with the various regions to assist and support government with employment creation within the country, but also to drive investment into the 14 regions of Namibia, because for the time that we have been in existence for the past 4 years, we have witnessed that many of the investments are focused on the Commerce region or Erongo region, and of course now with the oil discoveries in the Karas region. So we have then established the regional investment committees to highlight the regions in terms of opportunities that are available and unique within those regions, and also to deploy investment projects within those regions to drive and to revive economic activities. And of course, this will ensure that the people are employed within their regions, and also, of course, to ensure that there's investment projects within those regions. And the idea is really to have people from the region driving the development of the region by identifying and profiling their region in terms of what is it that is possible there, what projects can be deployed within those regions, and NIPDB, of course, is an entity of government that is mandated to promote Namibia as an investment destination, who then support the various stakeholders within the region to establish and drive these committees on behalf of the region. So this part of Namibia has, as the census found, that it has one of the highest unemployment rates in the country, but at the same time, it has vast land, it has rivers that are flowing. So it is really an ideal area in the country to deploy agricultural projects. We have a few green schemes in this region, but what else is available apart from the agricultural projects? What can be done in the region? If we are going to bring agricultural projects here, is it only to produce raw fruit and vegetables and send them out? Or can we actually set up agro-processing centers in the region and therefore diversify the economies, the local economy in the region, and of course contribute towards, like I said before, employment creation, and of course also skills that come with these projects. For that question, yes, we do collaborate with NIDA, which is the Industrial Development Agency under the then of Ministry of Industrialization and Trade, and it was really established as a commercial arm for the ministry to help industrialize Namibia. Now, when NIPDB was established, it was really established to attract both local investors and foreign investors to involve or to create a linkage to private sector to play a bigger role in, the economic development of the country. So NIPDB promotes Namibia and, of course, the various regions of Namibia for investment projects. And what we do is, of course, work with other state agencies such as NIDA and other government ministries as well as public enterprises, depending on the sector and also depending on their mandate. If there's, for example, an interest in oil and gas, we talk to NAMCO or other agencies. If there's an interest in agriculture, we would either talk to MITCO or we would talk to the Livestock and Livestock Product Board. So we do have complementary relationships that we have established with other government-owned institutions. And it's really to complement and support each other to say, how do we activate and improve productivity in the various sectors? As a matter of fact, we have established what we call productivity task forces that are really set up to to revive or increase productivity in various sectors or in certain sectors. And through those platforms, we then bring private sector and public sector together. And of course, these are championed by political leaders who are the ministers of those sector ministries. For example, Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy for electricity, and so forth. So we do not have the same mandate, but we complement institutions such as NIDA. On your last questions in terms of have we done enough to bring foreign direct investment in the country, Namibia has been ranked as the number one destination for FDI in Africa. And this has, of course, come is a result of a lot of work, both from NIPDB and other government entities to ensure that we work together and collaborate to bring in FDI into the country and, of course, to help us turn around the economy of this country and address the challenges of unemployment, inequality, and poverty. Thank you.
Okay, and now we pause right here. You are tuned into On The Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Let's just take a commercial break. We'll be back with yet more news to analyze. Stay tuned.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we are joined in studio by the Parliament Standing Committee on Natural Resources, that is Toby Upindi, also a member of Parliament, Dr. Toby Upindi. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to On The Radar Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Mm. Now, in a recent Parliament Standing Committee visit to Kabango West and Kabango East region, whereby you advised or standing committee members also advised Kavango East region to reconsider their current crop strategies by reducing reliance on traditional grain crops and exploring high value alternatives. Why was this so important, and what other findings did you actually find as you visited?
Quite a lot. But I think thanks for having me, Tesco, and I'd like to thank your viewers for tuning in. But maybe I should just take you through some few legislative, some dogmas that guide the committee. Because I feel like people endure long queues, hot sun, or even sometimes cold, electing leaders, and they don't really know what happened thereafter. And which is exactly why I say we need to understand exactly where the powers are derived from. Now, the National Assembly itself, if you go to Chapter 7 of the National of the Namibian Constitution, which is the supreme law of the country, mm-hmm. in Article 44, that the legislative power of Namibia shall be vested in the National Assembly, okay, with the power to pass laws and with the assent of the president, as provided for in this constitution, subject where applicable to the powers and functions of the National Council, if so required to review that particular law. But all the legislative powers of Namibia is vested in the National Assembly. Now, and then again, you go to other part of the constitution. For example, if you go to Article 41, which is the ministerial accountabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And it says all ministers shall be accountable individually for the administrative of their own ministries and collectively for the administration of the work of the cabinet, both to the president and to parliament. You see?
Correct.
The ministers are accountable, according to the constitution, to the president and parliament, both individually and collectively. So this is part, the legislative power to make laws includes the power to hold the executive accountable for their actions. So which means we must carry out programs of oversight and accountability to ensure that the programs that the executive is entrusted to carry out have been done in accordance with the constitution and in accordance with the intent and purposes that they were created to be. Now, and that is now the powers where now the parliament itself, which has that power, creates various standing committees.
Mm.
There are other standing committees focusing on other responsibilities.
On health and education and other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine because they have a dedicated field, for example, like education or ICT or foreign affairs, defense and security, and many, many others.
Yeah.
There's 14 of them altogether. But the parliamentary committee on natural resources is then that committee which focuses on natural resources. It's created, of course, under the Article 63(2)(f) of the Constitution, respective of the government entities. It's there to monitor and carry out oversight in any aspect of Namibia's natural resources, whether that natural resources is in the mining, green hydrogen, oil and gas, culture, wildlife, conservation, and all fisheries and marine resources and so on. So we sort of like have this whole grand portfolio of oversight. And the purpose and the reason why we went to both the Zambezi, Kavango, East and West, really part of our oversight activities in holding the executive accountable. We had the opportunity to visit various national projects around the green schemes that are in Zambezi, Kavango West and East, and also some conservancies that are also in the same three regions. So it's really a question of going out there, meeting various stakeholders, at least this green and this programs
of schemes
and others, and really familiarizing ourselves on the ground as to are these projects in line with their intent and purpose of national strategic objectives.
Mm.
Are they deviating? Are there some deviations?
And
what are the deviations? Can we point them out? And where now we point them out is that we will then compile a grant report, which we'll present to the National Assembly. And then once approved, then the Secretary of the National Assembly will then inform that particular institution, so that they can now carry out either implementation or rectify whatever the deficiencies that we've picked up. And if they don't,
mm-hmm.
we can hold them to account.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want parliamentary oversight authority to be on your neck.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be very severe.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for giving that thorough education on what Parliament Standing Committee on Natural Resources is all about. Now, I do get you are the chairperson of this Standing Committee on Natural Resources. And also we have Ims Nashinge, who is also part of the committee, and Ferdinande Hengom. I hope I'm saying that correctly, but thoroughly, can you also point out to us who is part and parcel of this Parliament Standing Committee on Natural Resources?
Well, first of all, the parliamentary committee in itself was constituted. Remember, every parliamentary, every parliamentary session, because we came in, we took our oath on the 20th March.
Yeah. 22nd of March. 25. Or 20th. Okay.
I don't know. That's now the March 20th.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We took the oath as parliamentarians. And when we took that oath, then there are other responsibilities. And now we became formally members of parliament of the 8th sitting.
Correct.
And after that, if you've been like following, we've had to now constitute in accordance with the constitution. I think that was now the 22nd of April,
mm-hmm.
where we now had to constitute the standing committees of parliament. This committee, of course, comprised of 24 members of the National Assembly.
Yeah.
Some of which you have already cited. It's chaired by a very dynamic woman in the form of Honorable Toriki Abrahams,
mm-hmm.
Who is the vice chairperson of the standing committee. So they are all drawn from various political dispensations, political
mm-hmm.
parties
mm-hmm.
of the assembly. In a proportional way, because remember the Parliamentary Standing Committee has to be an extension of the House itself.
Mm.
It's not a standalone entity. It's an extension of the House so that the House can reach on the ground in terms of oversight.
Mm.
So proportionally represented, but the responsibilities are much more profound, much more entrenched, and much more serious than the proportionality, because when we go out there, we don't go out there as leaders of various political dispensations.
Mm-hmm.
We go out there as national leaders who are given the responsibility by the Constitution of oversight, and to hold those who are accountable, to bring them to account, those who are responsible for various both national and non-national projects.
Yeah.
Obviously, we are not governing the part of only that, the part where public resources are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
We are governing the part where Namibia's natural resources are concerned, irrespective of who is having the responsibility to take care of those natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at our trip, for example. We went to the various green schemes that are in the hands of government.
Yeah.
But also we went to those that are not in the hands of government.
Mm.
Mutese, for example, in Kavango West, which is private, it's in the hands of a private operator. They are just equally as accountable to us as any other programs.
Mm-hmm.
So our projects continue. We will still have a lot of work to do in terms of both the green schemes and both the conservancies and both the new mining mineral corporations, the oil and gas, many other responsibilities in the marine resources. So oversight is couldn't come
at a right time, at a better time.
Whenever we go on recess, you know, maybe this is also where we don't educate our people
mm-hmm.
to a large extent. Like when we go on recess, people think, oh, parliamentarians, they're just resting, they are not. Actually, that's when the
work actually gets kicking in.
But remember, that is when we are there to debate laws.
Mm.
But the responsibility of a parliamentarian are much, much more vast. There's a lot of oversight. There's a lot of committee services. There's a lot of admin that goes on. And even internationally, we subscribe to international conventions and multilateral bodies that the Namibian Parliament subscribes to. So parliamentarians are extremely, extremely busy. But that's what they were voted for.
Yeah.
The servant of the Namibian people.
Of course.
Yeah.
Now let's get right our hands dirty on ground as you visited the green schemes. What are those particular findings that you found out that shook you to the core that, of course, you would want them to be implemented, rectified, or perhaps some that you're really quite happy with?
We left with a mixed feeling. One of the factors is that, let me, for example, talk about the green scheme.
Yeah.
Some of them are operating extremely well. For example, if you go to Dogalinena, the green scheme is, there are some few challenges here and there, but I'm very satisfied with regard to the level of production. Quality, the administration, the management, the output, the agricultural output, and the initiatives that are happening. But one of the things also that surprised me there was the high technology they are using. They're actually using a lot of satellite assisted agricultural, part of the new artificial intelligence and the fourth industrial revolutions, the Internet of Things, quantum, and many other things. Literally, they are even able to determine as to how much water they need to, for example, give to particular crops at whatever time. Precision farming, assisted by the fourth industrial revolution. That was Ndogalinena. I was very, very impressed. But then there's also those that were just really in a falling state. I mean, Sadi Kongora, for me, lacked the pedigree, though it's producing some grains like maize. It lacked the pedigree, for example, as comparativeness to Ndogalinena. But it has one of the best soils. It's got lots of water.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is not even about water and land, and it's not even about other strategic issues. It's really a question of, I think, poor leadership, and that I've mentioned. It's poor leadership right from, and it goes on to others as well.
Yeah.
Like poor leadership with regard to, I feel in 2021, the government took a decision to dissolve AgriBizDev, where the teams were falling under. Now everybody knows AgriBizDev was a disaster.
Yeah.
Policy program that is just, for me, is a national embarrassment. Now, this is 2021. Now, we're talking about 2025.
Mm-hmm.
The government has not literally directed, even though they've done well, as I said, some of them are operating very well. The strategic direction in terms of wrapping up AgriBizDev has taken way too long. And in some ways, there's a big contradiction and conflict as to, people don't really know where the business units stand.
Yeah.
You know, how they are going to incorporate them in the ministry. Now, if you're going to incorporate them in the ministry, what are your strategic intent? What's your vision? What is your leadership, your operating framework like, so that you improve effectiveness and efficiency within the Green Team program?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a bigger picture of lack of, I think, the greater vision, or at least I didn't see it today. And I'm sure government is working hard to do that, but to wrap up a company in 2021 and then you are in 2025 and you are still not moving as fast as possible, of course, within the greater context of many other national responsibilities, for me, it's just not acceptable. And I think it can be better. I think when the president talks about business unusual, this is what she's talking about, us to do things differently, not to keep doing the same thing over and expect the same, expect different results.
If you keep doing the same thing, you keep getting the same results.
There are no equipment there. Some of the equipment are broken. Some of them are old. If you go to Kalimbeza, which was my favorite, it was just in an appalling condition. Literally, instruments and of production are falling apart. They had managed to, let's say, produce about 180 tons of rice, but they couldn't even go ahead and process that rice. Now it's stuffed bags, risking decay and rotting, and because apparently the processing machine is broken, so they're waiting for winter. Despite many reminders in terms of the project itself, reminding Windhoek that you need this strategic machine, has generally fallen on deaf ears, or at least not been done even fast enough. If they are even in the process of doing it, because we didn't get that, we were not given confidence that it's really in the process of being acquired. So these are all the Namibia, I'm convinced the potential that we have is immense, but I'm also convinced that we need to redefine the entire regime. And perhaps the proof is in the pudding lies into wrapping up agribusiness, because somehow it's still operating somewhere there. Just here nationally, we think it's wrapped up, but it's not really wrapped up. It's still, but the ministry is moving in and fast in some of the projects, and I hope that very soon they will be able to robustly redefine the Green Scheme regime and move Namibia really in a massive production. There's a lot of production that has gone in there. With some of them that we have seen, like Mutese, which is in the private hands. We went to Secondo, which is just dynamic, just on the offcut of Rundu. And young people, very energetic, ready to work, ready to redefine history, and they are producing wheat, maize, horticulture, potatoes, sunflowers, like at Sadi Kongoro, there's also this project of producing sunflowers, which is also great.
Imagine.
We just need to enhance. What I'm trying to say is that we just need to enhance and give a new vision to our Green Scheme, and move faster than not wait to be caught unprepared. And then, of course, that's one side of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a chance to visit some of their conservancy programs. I'm sure you are well aware that the conservancy program was back in the late 90s, I think 1997, 98, was crafted under so-called CBNRM program, community-based natural resource management. The project was crafted so that community, you bring conservancy to the people, which means utilize natural resources in your locality and get them to benefit the community. And so you literally turn the community into conservationism, the natural resources within their areas.
Yeah.
Again, what I see there, in what I see, which was there in 1998 when the first set of conservancies were gazetted, they have the policy, they have proclaimed certain areas as conservancies, since 1998, when the first set of conservancies were proclaimed in Gazetted. They have the conservancy constitutions. They have members of the conservancy who are part of that local community. And that's it. And then you have now, then you have the wildlife that's in there. And then you have issues of where the conservancy now can give out hunting concessions to concessionaires. So because within those conservancies are hunting concessions.
Yeah.
And other concessions like timber harvesting and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But the greater part of them are depending on hunting concessions. Now conservancies, the people are really trying. They are building even infrastructures like water, drilling boreholes. They are supporting education. Some of the students that are at tertiary institutions, they are building clinics. They are building, they're putting up electric poles. They are assisting with conservation efforts.
Yeah.
There's no problem to that effect today. And then they get money from the concessionaire. Some of the concessionaires have set up maybe lodges here and there, like, for example, you will have in some of the conservancies, but some of them are just hunting concessionaires. So which means the conservancy now gets portion of the revenue from the hunting, concession.
Okay.
Now, the big challenge that I found is, this is exactly when the project, how the project was created at the beginning in the 90s.
Yeah.
There is no strategic direction with regard to improving this program and enhance it so it can get greater efficiency and greater empowerment, which it was meant to be. I can give you an example. And this is, they are operating exactly the same way they had operated in 1998. Those who were got in 1998.
Yeah.
And some of them in the 2000s and so on. Some of them as early as 2017. But here's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have this concession, these conservancies who have a concession, they have been, other than the the so-called, I would call it maybe, other than just the general generic training, they have not trained the conservancies to be promoted from a business unit of being a spectator to actually being a participant in the value chain itself.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they have not trained conservancies in trophy hunting so that we have young people or conservancy members who are trophy hunters themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, then, the concession itself, the conservancy can hold this concession, this hunting concessions for themselves, so that when now you deal with, because you hold now the concession as the conservancy yourself, you have your own concession because you have professional hunters there. Because part of the requirement is that you must be a professional hunter.
Yeah.
You can now participate in the greater scheme of the value chain.
Mm.
You will get a much bigger cut of the pie because you are the guide now of hunters that are coming in into the conservancy to do the hunting. That's a very, very big problem. The other problem is that they have not created any value addition to the conservancies, whether it's to their Devil's Core in terms of just preliminary beneficiation or processing the commodity. They have not even done, despite that all the conservancies all over the country are doing, most of them are doing professional hunting, that are coming in professional hunters to hunt for trophies.
Yeah.
They have not created even one taxidermist out of any conservancies. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to put all these things to somebody else to make the money. But the biggest daylight robbery is that because the conservancies are community people. They are people based in the community. They don't have the sophistication to negotiate this world-class projects or business opportunities with all these other professional hunters that are coming in to hold their concession. Whenever the ministry advertise the concessions for now these other people. Other people come from somewhere else, Windhoek and other places, to take over those concessions. Because the
conservancy.
Yeah. And the worst part, when they are paying the conservancies for the allocation, let's say, for the quota, because these conservancies are getting the quotas, they are literally paying a baseline price, and the conservancy will just have to toe the line because you are a community not so sophisticated in terms of understanding maybe what's going on globally, what's going, and to have that knowledge, that dynamic knowledge, to negotiate a multi-million-dollar contract with a potential concessionaire. So the concessionaire, well, potential concessionaire will just give you the base price. For example, they will just say, okay, for the elephant, we're going to pay you 215, one elephant. But you know that an elephant can go as high as even 2 million if you are able to really pull it off.
Yeah.
Now, imagine if the community was to get 1 million from one elephant. And that's in addition to all the other allocations which they have. Now, community has just been given, it's been paid almost base price for their games that have been hunted, because there's not anyone with that sophistication
and that knowledge.
World class contracts with these people. The other general issues that I think the ministry has completely, and so the Ministry of Environmental Affairs, Forestry and Tourism really need to up their games. They truly can be better when it comes to the conservancy program. They obviously the challenges of the invaders, people who are invading these conservancies, to resettle themselves in the core areas. Now, the core areas are the areas which are holding, which are the hangout zones for the wildlife.
Yeah.
And you destroy those core areas, and it's the end of the conservancy program.
True.
You know, and other things can, of course, be managed, like human-wildlife conflict. That should be expected if you are living in a conservation area. But I think they can be solved very fast, because if you look at it, I think the compensation that is there is backdated up to 2023. A person literally who lost their things in 2024 and even up for payment yet, you see. So it's as far back as 2023. So these are all things we can do better as a country. We have the resources. We can do better. And then one of the other issues we also had the chance of looking at, and if the activities, but we still have a pending trip to there, but we had to call them in for some discussion, is the issue of the oil and gas programs that are going on in the Kavango
basin.
So the two Kavangos. It's great because they've done a lot of good things in terms of social corporate responsibilities. They've drilled boreholes like beyond really imaginations. They've contributed a lot to education. They've contributed to conservation. They've contributed to community. And we have a lot of other back and forth discussion. We will be visiting them on site, because now they have started drilling again a new well there. So those are all economic issues that are going to become better for our country and our economy if we improve the way we manage these resources. Otherwise, really it was just a great honor meeting thousands and thousands of people and hearing from them, and also meeting us in some of the areas. They even said they've never seen a national leader before. And for us to have been there was very, people thought it was very, very profound, but I thought it was our greatest honor. Because I told people that we are not your leaders. We are actually your servants. You voted for us so that we can serve you.
Of course.
You didn't vote for us so that we can look very important with all our honorable titles.
Yeah.
It's completely crap. I'd rather drop titles and get the work done.
Correct.
Then rather like looking all good into your honorable self, it just doesn't work for me. What really greater good, I think that President Yuma talked about, and what the President, Her Excellency Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah is talking about, that, we need to carry out business unusual. Like business unusual means that you must activate, crisis management mood and solve goods for the greater community, rather than just doing business as usual and then failing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the president talks about that we are too few to be poor. And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, imagine if you were in the city of Lusaka, where you have probably around 5 million people and an unemployment maybe of about 30 million people. I mean, of 30-40%. It means if we were, there's more people in Lusaka than the whole of Namibia, but the unemployment there is like, what, 40%? But they have a lot of other SMEs that are not accounted for. So we are just too few to be poor, and the president is right. And I think people who are not ready to perform, they must get out of the way.
I hear you.
Because parliament is definitely going to hold them to account.
I hear you.
Without favor.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Kavango West Governor Verna Sinombor has called for the urgent establishment of a regional investment committee to unlock the region's untapped economic potential. And she noted that Kavango West possesses valuable natural resources, just as you've been pointing out to us actually here, such as fertile soil, water, and perennial river. And the region has not, but she says that the region has not fully harnessed these opportunities. And on tourism, she pointed to the Kavango River and its biodiversity, including hippos and crocodiles, as potential attraction for tourism development. Now, for you yourself, Dr. Toby Upindi, you say that the committee is ready to work with regional authorities and agricultural experts to support farmers who are willing to transition to diversify crop production. And of course, I'm getting the picture that perhaps in other areas as well. But where do we start exactly with the standing committee on natural resources? We have to start somewhere, but where do you suggest we start?
I feel that we have actually already hit the ground running in engaging all the stakeholders, and we had a great meeting with the governor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really happy that she's governor there. I think that's the newest of all the regions, following in the footsteps of the Honorable Sika Otsiku, who was there. Now she's a member of parliament.
Yeah.
And then Honorable Verna Sinombor coming in and really reigniting again a new sense of urgency and energy that I think she was appointed for by the president. It's a question of really, because the region has profiled so many challenges before, but there has always never really been a correlation between, I feel, the way we do statistics.
Yeah.
First of all, statistics for me mustn't be something we must do every after maybe 10, 5 years. Or statistics must be done monthly.
Mm.
But it supports planning. And if you look at that region, the population of just above, I think 120,000, if I'm not mistaken.
123,000, apparently.
Yeah, somewhere there.
Mm-hmm.
And but the correlation with national development agenda is just appalling. It's not tying into, because when you do planning and you do, you carry out national development, it has to be in proportionate to the numbers that you are working with. It gets the smallest pieces of the pie in terms of regional. I mean, the city or the town of Katima gets more than Kavango.
Okay.
And I feel that we need to realign our planning, so that we are able now to plan properly for the community that we are trying to serve. And then we need to now look at the greater, because the region has done really, really well in terms of profiling, some of the potentials that they have, as you have just narrated.
Yeah.
But there's still much more than what is not even seen.
Mm.
We need, from a natural resource point of view, is what you can see visibly with your naked eye. You know, the land, the water, you know, the good, soil, but in abundance. But there's also what you can't see. You have to do things like technologically advanced, like satellite mapping and other geophysical, mapping and many other, like magnetics and other surveys to show you about the what you can't see with your naked eyes. That is, you know, it's either under the soil or it's on top of the soil and you can't even see it. And the potential then, the fact that 10 years ago, we'll probably not even be talking about petroleum exploration in the greater, in the Kavango Delta.
Yeah.
But meaning in the Kavango region of the Delta, because the Delta is on the other side. But now that it's happening, because somebody dared to challenge the convention and do things differently, went to do magnetic and gravity studies that are not even touching the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the resource, potential of the resource in place, and started exploring it to the benefit of the greater good of society. So this region, when I zoom in both Kavango West and Kavango East, it is, they have serious potential of new discoveries, of new resources.
Yeah.
If you look at the agricultural sector itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Improve effectiveness within the green scheme, but also accelerate value addition to these resources.
Nice.
I've just spoken about, for example, all the conservancies there, despite them having been involved in trophy hunting, in all over the country, there's been not even one taxidermist investment, for example, either through the government's funding schemes or through other schemes so that they can be able to process the trophies right there in their own zone. They have not even been able to diversify, like they are still relying on just picking up the devil's claw the way it was done naturally, by just the natural forces.
Mm-hmm.
But when we, for example, look at conservancies so that they can start producing this commodity, even beyond beyond just the pickups.
Yeah.
Because I've once upon a time had the privilege of visiting Israel, and they are producing devil's claw there from Namibia. They have cloned our devil's claw.
Yeah.
Now they are producing it there to supply the greater market in massive.
My goodness.
The demand. Now, what about Namibia, where the plant itself has been naturally endowed?
Yeah.
We have other resources like a rosewood, for example, which is every time I drive from Zambezi, and I start the Ubuntu, which is part now Kavango, when Kavango starts, all throughout until I exit at Mururani there, I see rosewood everywhere, you know. I know that there were some other companies that were trying to do a lot of this theft and of rosewood, trying to cut it illegally. And I think the ministry at that time intervened some few years ago.
Yeah.
But rosewood is there, number one. How can we sustainably harvest it for the greater good of the community? But most importantly, because conservation is about, I think, sustainable development, which means it must not deplete. It must be reproduced and replenished for future generations.
Of course.
Can we now produce, for example, rosewood? Can the Ministry of Forestry? I mean, you are just there as called forestry for what?
I think even health. I think a collaboration between the Ministry of Health and Forestry, because I mean, we're talking about a devil's scroll that is able to traditionally used for a wide range of ailments, including digestive issues, fever, weakness, and all that kind of stuff. Other countries actually know about it. I came to know about it only 2 years ago, doctor.
A lot of people are talking about that somehow there's a patency by someone in Germany, apparently, who went to register the patency for devil's claws.
Mm-hmm.
But the patency is on the trademark of the good, that the commodity that they are. I think the good that they have produced, you know. Yeah, and that generally goes all over the place. It does not put a patency on our tradition and our way of living, and the need for us to carry out technological advances and innovation so that we can produce our own medicine in a different fashion. We don't need to use that patency.
Yeah.
You know, we can get our own patency around what we used to do as a country culturally.
Yeah.
You know, and they cannot stop us from there.
No, no.
So there needs to be a lot of beneficiation, so that things are processed. Like when we went I told you, like a study Kongora, there was a sunflower. They're also growing sunflower there, which goes into, they also have an oil producing, a small oil produce, factory there at the project itself. And then you have at Musese, where they are producing the flowers there, kind of like eating flowers,
mm-hmm.
that they are packaging themselves, and then they They send them out to their own retail shops in Rundu and in other parts of the country. And then much of their wheat is delivered at the two big suppliers, Namib Mill and Bokomo. And as it is with their maize.
Mm-hmm.
But can we also produce, like, can we come up with beneficiations within the region? That's how we process those commodities.
I think if
we process them before we send them out to the big producers who are then going to produce it. Mm-hmm. Other things mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
These are all things that can increase real jobs.
True.
Because the job opportunities in this region is immense.
Untapped.
Untapped. And we can't do, and I think that ties in with what the President of the Republic is talking about, that it has unusual. I hope that government people, us that are working in government, and it is also my colleagues, the honorable members that are heading those ministries, is going cascading down to their EDs, and everybody else understands the president says that, because surely parliament will activate its power to subpoena people where we feel that things can be different, and we are only doing this for the greater good of and benefit of our community.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know what? It's been such a wonderful conversation. But lastly, before I do let you go, this is what I've come to realize in all the times that I've covered stories on this. And of course, we have our reporter, Anakleta Haikera, right there, the side of Kavango East, Kavango West, always covering stories in that regard. And it just really shows that there is untapped potential there. But one thing that the green schemes themselves, farmers, struggle with is storage. So I think if as the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Natural Resources, you can really just push and advocate for storage, like you rightly said, about imaging stacks of what did you say? Is it maize that is just being there and which could actually, at the end of the day, could go to waste? And that's something that we definitely don't want.
You are right to some extent, because many of them actually have new, what do you call these silos, that are put up by the government.
Okay.
There was one particular one, which, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was the Vungo Vungo, green scheme. It doesn't have a single storage. It's all really appalling that, it's a big project, again, next to Zambezi on your way from Divundo. I mean, next to Katima on the way from, coming from the eastern side.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have even a single storage, and it's a very, very big project.
Mm.
And if put storages, then it's all right. They could be able to now really fill up their storages. What they do now is that for them to even harvest, they must harvest, and then the truck must be there waiting for them to fill up, and then the truck goes.
Ish.
So it and that also impaired the production.
Mm.
But you're right on the greater scheme of things. That is such an important part of the farm, so that they can really do things professionally. The other last part, which is really also touched me, is that you have in the green scheme, you have the main farm, which is the green scheme, then you have other little green schemes for the what you call small farmers. Now the small farmers are sort of like tag along on the main farm benefit, and they are producing for themselves.
Okay.
What I think is happening is that there seems to be an end. They are like they are kept, because you have maybe six hectares for yourself. Each one has 6 hectares for themselves. If you go to, I think, to Musese, it was much more, like 10 hectares.
Mm-hmm.
But now these farmers can't grow beyond just being small farmers, because the growth strategy is no longer there. The idea was always for them to grow to be small farmers, 6 hectares, and then they go to the 10 hectares, and then they now go to the mid section as producers. But now that growth path is no longer there. It has stopped. And I think if we need to activate that within the strategy so that our farmers can go on and become even bigger, it will be so good. And the other issue is that some of them, of course, are embedded. There's just absolutely nowhere to go where they can go and become bigger. The other issue is for them to go to that, they need to give some kind of collateral of 400,000 cash, which in the local farmer is too much, you know. We need to read it as to how we can remodel the program. This is why I say the Green Scheme has got, while it's really doing generally well, I was satisfied with Dongalinena. I was satisfied with Musese.
Mm-hmm.
I was satisfied, I think, with Spikondo. But the others were appalling. But this, even then, the same small farmers are still facing the same problem.
Yeah.
So, which is why I said the greater, you can't have one organization and this product is different from the other one. The standard in terms of standard and leadership.
Correct.
You can't operate like that, where it actually requires your local manager to, if they are a good manager and maybe they are well experienced, project is running well. If they are just in an appalling state, then the project goes generally to waste. So you need to standardize, you need to localize issues, challenges like of procurement, challenges of leadership, of structural deficiencies need to be solved. The greater vision of where we want to see the Green Scheme within the context of an operating Ministry of Agriculture running smoothly and effectively need to be redefined so that it cascades down all the way to the various Green Schemes with a proper standardized process where they are all at the same on par, same level of operating. And in that way, improve food security, which comes with jobs and work creation for our country and our people. We can do it. I really believe.
I believe it too. I really do. Dr. Toby Opindi, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar Analysis and really educating us, myself and the public at large. I'm really appreciative of your time, sir.
Thank you so very much. It's an honor to be with you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. And there you had it from the chairperson of the Parliament Standing Committee that on Natural Resources, that is Dr. Toby Opindi. Now, of course, this is on the Radar Analysis. Should you also want to partake and ask questions, perhaps right here, 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Come through air opinions and contributions, ask questions right here on the Radar Analysis. For now, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we shall be telling you what's making headlines, news beyond the borders. But before we get to news beyond the borders, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back. Like I said, you are tuned into On The Radar Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. Now we're moving over to economic indicators. Of course, we start off with the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now $1 today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 60 cents, while €1 will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 57 cents. £1 sterling, on the other hand, will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 79 cents, and $1 Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 43 cents. £1 Botswana pula will get you 1 Namibian dollars and 31 cents. Pardon me, £1 Botswana pula will get you 1 Namibian dollars and 26 cents, while 1 Kenya shilling will get you 0.14 Namibian dollars. Now, 1 Liberian dollar will get you 0.087 Namibian dollars. Let's move on to trading economics. Uranium futures in the U.S. rose to $73.5, gaining traction after trading in narrow range around $71.5 since early July, amid signs of more bets on nuclear power by major countries and industries. India announced its target for nuclear capacity for 2047 at 13 times the current level, in addition to loosening tight regulations on the sector for private companies to mine and process uranium. Additionally, data center company Equinix entered deals for nuclear power facilities in its global data centers, aligned with recent trends for the power-hungry infrastructure, with Microsoft, Alphabet, and Meta having procured nuclear energy sources for future data centers. In the meantime, top miner Kazatomprom noted it will achieve a midpoint production of 14 million pounds, nearly 20% below its guidance from late 2023. Lithium carbonate prices surge further toward 85,000 per ton in August, erasing this year's slump to the highest in 1 year, as low output from key mines countered oversupply worries. Now, the Chinese government pledged capacity cuts to major industries that have suffered from deflationary pledges in recent years, driving investors to bet on an outlook of lower lithium supply out of the world's top refined lithium producers. The mine is responsible for around 5% of global supply. Last year, global output was 35% higher on strong production from China, Indonesia, and DRC Congo. Output from main producers was still set to grow this year as miners refrained from voluntary close operations to retain market share and business relationships with government and battery producers. The yield on the Russia 10-year OFZ sank to 13.5% in August, the lowest in 15 months, as the outlook of lower interest rates and the growing prospects on the end of Russian war with Ukraine supported bonds across all maturities. Now, President Putin met with U.S. counterpart Trump to discuss terms that could be accepted on a ceasefire or end of war before Trump met with Ukraine and EU leaders, exemplifying the U.S. willingness to broker an agreement for peace. Now, in the meantime, lower inflation and a pessimistic growth prospect strengthened the case for the Bank of Russia to extend its cutting cycle from the current rate of 18%. Now, price growth fell for a fourth straight month to 8.8%, the lowest in 9 months, and aligning with the CBR's call of lower inflation. In 10 international financial institutions, in the IMF and the World Bank, expect the Russian economy to grow less than 1.5% this year, the least since 2016, when excluding pandemic and war shocks. Lastly, wheat futures fell toward $5 per bushel, nearing a 1-year low, pressured by ample global supplies. Now, Russia's Ikara consultancy raised its 2025 wheat crop forecast to 85.5 million tons from 84.5 million. Optimism around potential peace talks in Ukraine also weighed on prices, as settlement could restore exports from both Russia and Ukraine. major global grain suppliers. Now let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we shall be telling you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Get ready for news beyond the borders. We start off regionally, move over to continental, and thereafter some international news. Now we're starting off in South Africa, where Eskom has agreed to the implementation of a one-third debt write-off for Sol Phalchi Municipality.
One of the conditions of the debt relief program by the National Treasury was for the municipality to reinforce their electricity income, which the Sol Phalchi municipality says the smart meters implementation has slightly improved the municipal electricity income. With the state of municipalities' debt with the power utility Eskom, over 248 million rand will be written off on the debt of more than 1 billion rand the Sol Phalchi municipality has.
We are on our way as a municipality to try and be financially sound. It is going to be a process. We are still owing Eskom, but we hope that with this kind of gesture, this will go a long way in terms of finally clearing the debt of Eskom. We are left with two installments, yearly installments, which means that if we again keep our current account up to date, in the next year we will also be eligible for another one-third. We are owing Eskom slightly over a billion rand, and with these write-offs, two of them, which means that we have about 2 years to clear the Eskom debt. And like as I said, that will go a long way in terms of improving our services.
Eskom says the level of debt is a serious concern and urges municipalities to come forward in improving their revenues.
This level of debt is not sustainable and could put Eskom in a difficult position if we don't take action. We are working hand in hand with National Treasury to find ways to reduce this debt, because if we don't, it could undo the positive impact of the 254 billion rand debt relief we received under the Eskom Debt Relief Act. We also encouraging municipalities to come on board through the distribution agency agreement, or what we call the DAA, so we can support them in improving their revenue collection so that they can be able to service their debt.
The Sol Phalchi municipality says it is committed to pay off the Eskom debt. The debt write-off will come into effect on the first week of September. Karabo Siyoko, SABC News, Kimberley.
President Cyril Ramaphosa is in Japan attending the International Conference on African Development.
Ramaphosa has arrived in Tokyo, Japan, to attend the International Conference on African Development. Japan has invited 49 African countries to attend this conference. High on the agenda will be peace and stability around the globe. The theme of the gathering will focus on the economic and social issues. President Ramaphosa will also hold bilateral talks with Japan Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba. International Relations and Cooperation Minister Ronald Lamola says South Africa is one of the beneficiaries from Japan, as Tokyo has invested in the country and created many jobs.
TICAD is one of the key development partners for the African continent on a number of issues, financing the economy, And as you can see, most of Japanese companies have invested a lot in the African continent, and South Africa being one of the key beneficiaries, with some of the biggest Japanese companies invested in our country, and not just invested, but with a value addition in terms of manufacturing, in terms of the entire value chain. When you look at the automotive sector in South Africa, with one of them being the key rep of the Japanese companies' investment in the continent, but not only in the automotive sector, but in the entire economy of South Africa, they've invested a lot, and their companies have created more than 150,000 jobs in our country, with huge investment into the economy. So this remains a very key, important strategic platform. But they are not only invested in terms of the economy. The fact that they are participating in the entire value chain, as I've already said, is very key also for South Africa's participation in the Africa Free Trade Area, in the whole continent, but also to ensure that our own minerals are processed in the African continent. We are able to export material that have been processed. So this is very key for South Africa. But also, in addition to that, they also participate a lot in the UN peacekeeping mission. Japan is one of the biggest contributors to the UN Peace Fund, which makes a lot of contribution also in the African continent, as you are aware, in Somalia and many conflict areas. So they are a key development partner. So that's why South Africa is here, to continue in this trajectory, to ensure value addition in the continent, to ensure peace, and also to find a development partner on key multilateral platforms at the UN. Also issues of credit financing for development. So this becomes a very important platform for us.
In the meantime, Nigeria has adopted new strategies to address intercommunal tensions.
For years, disputes over land and water have led to violent clashes between farmers and herders in Nigeria. Tens of thousands of people have been killed and food production affected. Now the government is proposing the setting up of cattle breeding centers to keep herders in controlled spaces and reduce the risk of conflict.
I'm glad the government is coming up with such an initiative. As herders, we have become endangered species as we move about with our cattle, always accused of fomenting trouble, even when we're innocent.
But farmers are more cautious. Many say they've heard similar promises before.
The government has always made promises, but doesn't always deliver on them. It's a good idea, because we farmers and herders are all tired of the conflict we are always engaged in. I only hope it won't go the way of other unfulfilled plans.
Nigeria's parliament says the conflict has claimed more than 60,000 lives since 2001. Cattle breeders also say they've suffered heavy losses.
Cattle breeders under the aegis of the Mieti Ala Cattle Breeders Association of Nigeria, MACBAN, say over 4 million cattle belonging to its members have been rustled, especially in the country's northern region, in the last 10 years.
Officials say the new centers will not only reduce violence, but also modernize Nigeria's meat and dairy industry. But this is not the first attempt. A 2019 initiative known as the Rural Grazing Area Policy, or RUGA project, collapsed amid controversy over land allocation. Agriculture experts warn that this time, success will depend on proper consultation and delivery.
It will need more collaborations between the government and the indigenes, you understand, because there's a lot of forth and back conversation. Just saying it is not enough, but you need to start acting on what you say, you know, with proof of timing. We don't actually explore as we are meant to. It's just because we still hold on to the old ways of doing this. So I feel it will help by not allowing the cattle to move around. You'll be specified in a particular location.
The government has not set a start date, but farmers and herders alike say the project must move quickly, not only to reduce tensions, but also to create jobs and new opportunities in Nigeria's livestock sector. Tessem Akendi, CGTN Jobs.
SoftBank to put $2 billion US into Intel. US may also take a stake.
SoftBank is taking a $2 billion stake in chipmaker Intel. The move is part of efforts to ramp up support for the troubled US firm. It's been struggling with losses and weak demand at its foundry unit, which makes semiconductors for other companies. In a statement Monday, the two firms said SoftBank would pay $23 per share to acquire Intel stock. According to LSEG data, the deal will make it the sixth largest investor in the company. Earlier, Bloomberg News reported that the US government is in talks to take a 10% stake in Intel. That would be worth about $10 billion. The report comes after President Donald Trump called for the resignation of company chief executive Lip-Bu Tan. He's accused Tan of having inappropriate ties to Chinese firms. SoftBank declined to provide more details on its Intel deal when approached by Reuters. It would mark the latest in a run of mammoth investments by the Japanese giant. That includes committing $30 billion to ChatGPT maker OpenAI, while SoftBank is also leading the financing for Stargate, a $500 billion data center project in the US.
And now with that, we have officially come to the conclusion of this episode of On the Radar Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program, that is our Oshiwambo News Bulletin, brought to you by Loise Shimi. Thereafter, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut kicks off at 16:30, and at 1800 hours, you can expect David Shombe with a business economic segment. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful Tuesday and see you again Wednesday, same time, same place, right here on Eagle FM frequencies and at 1300 hours to 14:30. Goodbye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
My friend,
Saima,
why do you seem
don't
so
worry
worried?
About the small things.
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook,
Instagram and LinkedIn, our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%. Is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha, utekiroka guna, imatina, omjo. Chikawa shafasa na nana, nongeshifa, ya eshiwike moshuwana. Iye moyawo, ota ingongotisa mweni. Anangeshifa, ya Namibia, ombitombwa na wa oronjika. Seisa nina omayaguro nirandisoma yoe, yongeshefa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwa shipareki uimepo yomo programa zetu. Moambo dengira selma, kodara heta tuimu. Datu heari.